From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama in Boston this morning in solidarity with the city days after the Boston Marathon bombing. And famous Boston natives and notables all over sharing their support. Ben Affleck and Conan O'Brien, Atul Gawande and Mindy Kaling, and Mark Wahlberg, and so many more. We wanted to hear straight from Bostonians today, prominent voices on how they are absorbing, thinking about what has happened and what it means. This hour, On Point writer Dennis Lehane, musician Amanda Palmer, writer Anita Shreve, NPR's own Ray Maliazzi, and more on the heart of the city after the Boston Marathon bombings. You can join us on air or online. Boston listeners, listeners all over, we want to hear from you. How are you taking this in? Join us anytime digitally at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. This conversation really never ends. Later this hour, we will go to West Texas, near Waco, where a major explosion at a fertilizer plant has left many dead and wounded. We'll go there. But first, Boston. With me in the studio is Boston's own Dennis Lehane, author of Mystic River, Shutter Island, Moonlight Mile, Live by Night, all set in and around his hometown. Grew up in Boston's Dorchester neighborhood. He's been thinking and writing about the city and the bombing all this week, including an essay in the Times headlined, Messing with the Wrong City. Dennis Lehane, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to On Point.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Proud and heartbroken was your first response online this week. Where were you when you first heard the news? How did you take it on?
I got a call from my wife saying she was having trouble getting through, and then that's when I noticed my cell phone was down. And then she said she had heard a rumor about an explosion, and then that was it. I went, you know, in this day and age, went on to Boston.com, and boom, there it was. And this was probably 20 minutes, maybe 25 yeah. minutes after the explosion.
Yeah.
And then I walked out. I had to go to the post office, and I walked out to go to the post office and cross Beacon Street, cross the route. Because I live just about two miles west from Kenmore Square.
Yeah.
And there it was, you know. There you just saw people just, you know, walking around and a lot of hugging and a lot of people sort of staring at their phones. And just a sense of everybody a little bit dazed trying to figure this one out.
Everybody in the country, many in the world at this point, having seen those explosions, the one and then 12, 13 seconds later, the second one right near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. I mean, explosions are always shocking to see. West Texas knows that today. Huge explosion there. But remind us about that day. I mean, this day every year in Boston, the sort of tenor, the texture of that day, and why the blood and explosion was so particularly jarring doesn't begin to capture it for Bostonians.
Well, for Bostonians, I mean, this is where it hit is, you know, the center of the city. You know, Copley Square is really the center of the center if you look at it. And so that's where it hit. It hit right across from, you know, the Boston Public Library, which is a pretty iconic central branch building. It's a pretty iconic building. We all recognize it.
Symbol of the sort of open democratic learning.
Yes, which I think all of these people, the one thing that you're going to find the commonality between every terrorist you're ever going to see, whether they're domestic, whether their cause is the Islamic Jihad, or whether it's, you know, militia BS that Tim McVeigh represented, what you see over and over again, I think, is a hatred of knowledge. I think you see is a hatred of learning. They're terrified of it.
And the symbolism of this particular day of the year in Boston, the Boston Marathon Day, Patriots Day.
Patriots Day. Yeah, Patriots Day. And that's
And this anniversary, of course, of 1775 and the shot heard around the world and Lexington Green and the bridge at Concord and all the rest, the first battles of the American Revolution.
And we don't even know yet. Maybe April 15th is significant. Who knows? But I would say at the end of the day, you know, there's a part of me that says, "Who cares?" Whatever your reasoning is, it's paltry and pathetic, and I'm not really interested. What you did was to attack innocent people. You attacked children. You're not even looking at children as part of collateral damage. You're looking at children as targets. So
because this was put where spectators would be,
yeah.
Families watching, literally in this case, watching a dad and then dying.
So I don't think. Advancing your cause isn't going to happen, you know.
I'm thinking not so much from the bomber's perspective, but from Bostonians' perspective on that
right.
day. The spring day, which, as you've written, is so open to the joy, the athleticism, the accomplishment, the achievement, and the historical memory of a fight for freedom.
Right, absolutely. And a fight for freedom that let us also not mistake that we won. I mean, part of me just keeps saying, and I said it in my article in the New York Times yesterday, and I stand by this. It's not to say we're not shaken right now. We are shaken. We're not going to remotely change who we are. We're an old city with an old history. We've been bloodied before. We'll be fine, thank you very much. We will gather around and we will provide solace to our wounded and we will move on. And we're not going to change. I don't think the city is going to change its character one bit.
Your headline, Messing with the Wrong City, is that what you meant by that?
Because that is.
It won't be changed on that score.
It won't be changed. It's not a macho posturing. It's not bring it on. It's not any of that madness. When people were talking about, you know, this isn't, they messed with the wrong city, and messed was the nice word. The idea is look, we've been here. We're Bostonians. We're resilient. You're not going to change us. It's not, we're going to find you. We're going to hang you from the tallest yard on whatever that is. The authorities will take care of that. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they're already on it. It's just that you're not going to change the character of a city, which was, I think, the scariest thing that happened after 9/11. Was we felt the character of this country changing. We felt this idea that it's okay to toss away a few liberties in the interest of security. And that would have just made, and probably did, make the Founding Fathers roll over in their grave.
You don't see Boston going there.
I don't.
I mean, on that day of all days, when that river of runners coming down Boylston Avenue, it really looks like the entire world is the entire world. I mean, it is everybody from every corner of the planet coming in there.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. I think what the marathon says is what the Boston Marathon says, similar to the New York Marathon, same thing, is we're going to bring the citizens of the world together and they are going to engage in something that is very simple. It is just an expression of athletic ability. And they're going to do it again next year.
We, of course, heard from the Boston Celtics coach, Doc Rivers. He lives just very nearby the finish line there. And he was saying, quoting the Boston Globe here, I always go down after practice and watch the Boston Marathon. I've done it every year we've been in town, literally just two blocks. He said, it's just awful, this bombing. He says, it takes the joy out of sports because that's what sports is supposed to bring, is joy. And Doc Rivers saying, don't stop thinking about this. He said, I don't think you should get it out of your mind. I don't think anyone's going to get it out of their mind. It will be on your minds. Here he is talking on Tuesday, a day after the bombings, the coach of the Boston Celtics, Doc Rivers.
Being in the city, the one thing I will say is you're just really proud to be part of Boston. I saw people didn't work for the police or anything like that, directing traffic, showing people where to go, and I just thought the spirit of Boston was phenomenal.
Doc Rivers right there. You can hear the basketballs bouncing, I think, in the background. You say it won't change the city, and yet he's saying don't stop thinking about it, and many others as well. So when you meditate on this, I mean, I know personally I was so shocked. It comes in this day that's all about kind of springtime softness and beauty and joy, and then all the images of blood. And then I was angry. I'm still wrestling with this anger because to go after you, such soft targets, families and children and exhausted runners, is just... But then we've got to think it on through. Where do your thoughts go?
Well, I think, again, what you're saying is, did it give us pause? Absolutely. Are we going to always remember this day? Absolutely. Are we going to feel differently or think differently? Yes. But are we going to act differently? That's the key. I think the key is, no, you don't get to change our way of life. It's not happening. You know, not in this city. I think I'd like to speak to Doc Rivers' point, too. The most triumphant thing I ever saw, and certainly a fist in the eye of this idea that they're trying to propagate. The point of terrorism is to spread terror. It's very simple. It is to paralyze the populace. Mm. And the instantaneous reaction of civilians in the city of Boston when that explosion went off was to run toward it.
Many.
That is astonishing. Those people need to be given keys to the city. They need to be all given medals. They need to be their names need to be put on a plaque.
And it was instant to lift the wounded, to put pressure on those bleeding, missing limbs and what remained, to go right at where
right
the explosions
at it. And when
were.
They saw the second, you could see them react to the second explosion that happened, you know, the next block down. Mm-hmm. You could see them react and yet still keep running. So they knew by that point, there's no question, your mind is processing very quickly at that point. They knew this isn't a gas explosion, this is terrorism, and yet they ran in there. That, to me, thwarted every single desire of the terrorists in the first place.
My colleague Jack Beatty reminds us of this quote from Emerson talking about Boston. Says, the town of Boston has a history. It's not an accident, not a windmill or a railroad station or a crossroads tavern or an army barracks grown up by time and luck to be a place of wealth, but a sea of humanity, of men of principle, obeying sentiment and marching loyally whither that should lead them, so that its annals are great historical lines, inextricably national. Ralph Waldo Emerson there talking about this city. Maybe a reaction similar to 9/11, but you're also saying maybe not. Maybe a city where resilience says, no, we won't be turned.
Yeah, I brought this up the other day, too. We do have in the rear view of our history the Battle of Bunker Hill, and what people always forget, certainly at a national level and even on a local level, is we lost. The Battle of Bunker Hill was lost. But the way that the Bostonians showed up, the way that they fought that battle, so absolutely terrified the British ranks that they knew in that moment they'd lost the war. They won the battle, they lost the war. And I think that's a good cornerstone to place our hand to as we're going through these days.
Boston Marathon Day and a bombing. Of course, it's also Patriots Day, when those uniforms of the early American revolutionaries, farmers really in Lexington Green, the muskets, they come back out, they're reenacted. Dennis Lehane is with us in the studio. We're hearing from prominent Bostonians today. Anita Shreve will join us, Amanda Palmer, Ray Maliazzi in just a minute. You were talking with Bostonians about the Boston Marathon blasts this week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Reenactment sound there from the Battle of Lexington on Monday, Patriots Day in Massachusetts, the same day this year as the Boston Marathon bombings. That day in 1775, the first battle of the American Revolution, reenacted every year on Lexington Green and beyond. And sound from there with us as we look back on Monday's events today with Bostonians, thinking about the Boston Marathon blasts. Well-known Bostonians, talking with them about what they're thinking, feeling after the attack on their city and its famous run and more. Later this hour, we will go to West Texas near Waco, where a fertilizer plant explosion today has done terrible damage to a little town. Dennis Lehane is with me in the studio, author of many big books, Mystic River, Shutter Island, Moonlight Mile, and more. Raised in Boston's Dorchester neighborhood, knows the city well. His headline this week on an essay in the Times, Messing with the Wrong City, by which he means Boston won't change from its, what, Dennis, from its historic attachment to liberty, yep, to
civil discourse.
Civil discourse won't be moved. We've got more Bostonians coming to us this hour. Well, one from maybe just across the river, Ray Maliazzi joins us right now, host of NPR's Car Talk, born in East Cambridge, just across the Charles River from Boston, lifetime Boston guy. Ray, thank you very much for being with us. What have you been thinking this week as we all try and take this on board, Ray?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Well, like everyone in Boston in the vicinity, I was obviously stunned. I just, you know, you can't believe that it happens. It could happen in our city. And, you know, we're used to seeing it happen in Kabul and Damascus and Baghdad. And
yeah.
These are kind of daily occurrences, but it's certainly something I didn't expect to see at the Boston Marathon. It was such a beautiful day, and the Red Sox had won the game earlier in the day, and the marathon was still going on. It was tough to take.
Right.
But I think that, you know, I was thinking back about the September 11th attack, and I remember there was one woman who had escaped one of the towers, and she was being interviewed by a reporter on the street, and he asked her, you know, what her thoughts were. And she was an African-American woman and said, you know, in my community, we've always had a contentious relationship with the authorities, especially the police and the fire department. And she said, today, all of that changed, because as we were running out of those buildings, those police and firemen were running in, and they showed incredible courage.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of courage displayed on Monday, for sure. And not just by the, you know, the officials, by the first responders and such, but by civilians who didn't run away. In fact, they rushed to help victims with complete disregard for their own safety, and I guess I'd have to call it like reckless bravery. They just decided that they were going to help people, you know. And after the first explosion and the second explosion occurred within, I think, 15 or 20 seconds,
yeah,
he just didn't know that there weren't going to be 5 or 10 more. And to have that kind of courage to go and help people, knowing that you could be a victim yourself, was just an incredible inspiration.
Just instinctive and just instantaneous, as Dennis Lehane says as well. Ray, you know that stretch of Boylston Street. I mean, this is the farthest thing from a Kabul battlefield. And then all these images this week of blood everywhere down there, Ray.
Oh, I know. I know. And I've been there many times myself. And I know next year I'm going to be there.
On Marathon Day?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think we'll have a bigger crowd there than ever before.
Why do you think this particular event and place and time would be targeted?
I have no idea. I mean, it's impossible to get into the mind of someone who would do this. I mean, clearly, the minds of the people who would do this are beyond our comprehension. And certainly, it's not something that you or I, or any rational person, would think of doing. But obviously, someone has an agenda of some kind, which we can only hope to understand at some point, but probably never will.
Ray, I know we've only got you for another minute. You and your brother Tom are famous as Click and Clack for your irrepressible humor. Where does that go in a week like this? When does it come back?
It's it's hard to say.
Yeah,
it's hard to say. But you know, there is a positive in all of this, and the actions of those civilians on Monday can really inspire the rest of us to do something that we would otherwise run away from. And it doesn't have to be something profound like running into a burning building, but I hope that some of us might gather the courage to do something that we think we're incapable of. And it could be something as simple as deciding to care for an aged loved one or repairing a relationship. And I think all of us can increase our courage and our resolve to do something that we thought we couldn't ever do.
Run to it. Run at the problems, not away.
Exactly.
It's a good point. We'll leave it there. Ray Maliazzi, co-host of NPR's Car Talk with his brother Tom, Click and Clack. Ray, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Dennis Lehane, it's so good to have you right here. Anita Shreve joins us in just a moment. Lots of callers here. Valerie in Quincy, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Valerie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I had so much to say when I first dialed the phone, and now I'm sort of stumped for words. I think the first reaction is complete and utter shock, and it's still seeming very surreal. But I know the feeling that keeps emerging for me is a feeling of being very protective. I'm an Emerson alum. Those are my stomping grounds, Copley Square, every back alley, every public restroom when you're a college student.
Yeah.
You know, that's my neighborhood, and I feel extremely protective. And, you know, then you get this feeling of helplessness. Well, geez, what can I do? I'm not right there. How can I help? And then I remembered I'm a school teacher in Boston Public Schools, and I wanted to be a teacher in Boston because I love this city so much. And then I get the answer to what can I do, and I'm going to start going back to work on Monday after April break, and it makes me feel stronger and more sure that I made the right choice by becoming a teacher in this city. And just to sum it up, I live in Quincy. I'm on the ocean. I went and walked on Tuesday, the day after this unbelievably horrible incident, and I looked across at the Boston skyline. And it was a sunny, beautiful day, and the city is beautiful, and it's going to continue to be beautiful. And what makes it extra beautiful is the people that live here.
You know, the president is in Boston today, sort of sharing comfort with Bostonians. He's done that all over the country in recent years. And you remember, and Dennis, I mean, he was in Newtown just recently. He was in Aurora, Colorado. He was in Tucson, famously. Valerie, did you ever expect Boston to end up on that list of cities, towns that need the comfort?
I don't think you ever expect that. I don't think you ever expect it to happen in your hometown. You know, you watch the news, and I think we become desensitized to a certain extent, and then it hits. And then you realize that, you know, I think this could happen anywhere, and I think the worst thing we can do is be afraid. And I am really grateful that the president is here. I think it sends a strong message. And, I know we're going to get through this. And, we're going to become stronger as a result.
Valerie, thanks for your call. Dennis Lehane, that protective urge to kind of put your arms around these people who are wounded around a city, as many as you can in the aftermath of something like this is very strong.
Yeah, it's the communal. I mean, it is. It's that says everything about a community. You know, it's the communal impulse. It's what can we do for our sick and our wounded.
And this was a week to go right toward it, as Ray Maliazzi said, and Bostonians did, as of course, Ray reminds us, and we all remember, it happened in New York. It happens. People, the goodness comes out, even as the bad is right there. Dennis Lehane, stand by. Anita Shreve joins us right now from Boston, novelist, author of The Pilot's Wife and A Change in Altitude and Rescue and many more. She was at her home just blocks away from the marathon finish line when the bombs went off. Author of the forthcoming Stella Bain. Anita Shreve, thanks very much for being with us. Did you hear the blast?
Thank you. Oh, I certainly did.
And what did you think?
It was a very loud explosion, and then I ran to the window, and I could see the smoke coming up between the... I'm about a block away as the crow flies.
Wow.
And, I was thinking, oh, gas main or some jerk with, cherry bombs or something. It didn't cross my mind that it would be deliberately done. And then 10 seconds later, I heard the second bomb. And the thing that was stunning to me was that immediately, I live on the seventh floor, and immediately there were hordes, hordes of people running for their lives, so to speak, to get to Commonwealth Ave where they felt it was safer.
And when you saw the blood and mayhem, what went through your mind, Anita?
Well, I've only seen the blood. I've seen the mayhem right after the explosion, but I've only seen what we've all seen of the blood on the sidewalk. What I thought about it, I thought it was horrendous.
You and Dennis
are... it was so much bigger than I thought.
Yeah.
I originally thought it was.
You and Dennis are novelists. You get inside people's minds and bring them to life for us. How are you thinking about the heart and mind of this city and its how it absorbs what's happened this week?
Well, it's evolved. By the way, hi, Dennis.
Hi, Anita.
Hi. It's evolved. I think, the first day I was just simply glued to CNN. Actually, I still am. I have at the end of my street an Army vehicle that looks a lot like the vehicles that you, deconstruct IEDs with.
Mm-hmm.
We've
seen them from Iraq. We've seen them from Afghanistan. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And the streets have been blocked off. And there are now messages to various people, and there's a lot of, as Dennis wrote about, don't mess with us. And I was glued to the television the first day. Then I was in a state of. Quite stunned and very, very sad about Martin Richard. And
the 8-year-old boy who had greeted his father and come back to his mother and sister and now dead.
For me. It just changed everything. And then, I've pretty much been, I took a walk in the area the next morning. It was very eerie, incredibly quiet. And there were barricades everywhere, and they must... there must be 1,000 police here. I mean, it's the safest city in America at the moment.
At the moment, but now in line with others that maybe people don't think about a parade they'll join until they do. I mean, Fort Hood and Tucson and Aurora and Newtown and New York City on 9/11 and,
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. The whole country has watched, but you don't think of your city in that list or your town in that list until suddenly
No. It
is.
I mean, it's really stunning. It's hard to wrap your mind around it. My feeling is there will be more people than ever, ever in next year's marathon. I think that's how Boston will show its resilience, is by not being intimidated. I mean, I would imagine security would be, unbelievable at any gathering, sports gathering. I'm sure people over at Fenway are just scratching their heads wondering how you protect all
the
those
ballpark.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet, security itself can change the flavor of a thing. Part of the unique joy of any marathon, the Boston Marathon certainly, is all those miles of people on their lawn chairs and just lined up. Security, the last thing on most people's minds.
Right. Right.
And not now. Freddie in Cohasset.
The joy of it. It's like a picnic. I mean, it used to be like taking your kids to a parade or to a picnic.
Let's hope it can be again. Freddie in Cohasset, mm-hmm. Massachusetts. Freddie, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate your show, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'd like to make a comment and to relate my experience in Boston on Monday. And this is my comment.
Yeah.
How can we as a people continue to accept, practice, glorify, and profit from violence and then be surprised when we become victims of it?
What are you pointing to?
All violence. Tom, I've been an active political activist for the last 3 years, and my experience was I was on Boston Common Monday with a placard promoting world peace through a people's global revolution against violence. It's sad. This whole state of humanity as far as accepting and condoning violence is pretty sad, and I don't think the answer is addressing the weapons that are used, but by the insanity of condoning, accepting, and practicing violence. I was thrown off the common for demonstrating against violence on Boston Common 2 hours before the bombs went off. I didn't realize I passively agreed to move off the common, but in retrospect, had I known the events that were to follow, perhaps I should have stayed and made a point to further promote.
So you're saying we can't be shocked when there's violence, when what? When we live in a culture that exercises it, and certainly culturally there's plenty of it around.
We promote it, we accept it, we practice it. It's manifested in all our countries' wars, poverty, lack of health, in our homes, and homelessness, and being condoned and glorified in our media our whole lives through.
Freddie, we've got it. It's a very Boston kind of voice and notion that you raised right there. Dennis, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's a valid point. My question would be, how can you put that into practical action in today's world? Where do you want to go with that? You want to say that we're just going to stop violence at a global level? I would say that's a wonderful idea. Now, how do we do it? Is there a practical path that we can follow here? Is there a map?
I mean, it may start with a simple raising of a placard saying, less of this, please.
That would be nice. Yeah, that would absolutely be nice.
Freddie doing that right there.
And I do think that there's
irony, I think,
Anita?
The irony is, as we saw yesterday, that 2 days after this, our own Congress can't pass the gun bill.
Yeah, everybody very sobered by that yesterday.
Yes. That's the answer right there.
Well, what's sad is that when you're seeing the only thing that Republicans and Democrats can agree on is that we shouldn't have background checks. That's really depressing. When 90% of the American public says we want background checks, and basically you guys just sold your souls to be reelected. I mean, well done. Good for you.
And for the reelection assistance of what, a minority with the money that will put up the dollars to help in those campaigns.
10%.
Yeah.
10%.
Yeah.
That's pretty, I mean, that was a very depressing. We cannot get Republicans and Democrats together on anything except what was, again, yesterday, a really shameful vote.
Dennis Lehane, stick with us. Anita Shreve, I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes today.
Oh, I was glad to do it. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Bostonians about the Boston Marathon blasts this week. Well-known Bostonians about what they're thinking, feeling after the attack on their city and its famous run. And later this hour, we'll go to West Texas, near Waco, where a fertilizer plant explosion today has done really terrible damage to a little town right there. We have heard things this week that we do not normally hear. The Boston Red Sox seventh-inning stretch song, Neil Diamond's Sweet Caroline, played at the Diamondbacks-Yankees game on Tuesday at Yankee Stadium, a tribute to the Boston Marathon bombing victims.
Sweet Caroline, the times never seem so good.
that in Yankee Stadium, something you will very, very rarely hear. You can join us today. Where do we go from here? What do we do with the sense of vulnerability after the Boston Marathon bombings? Dennis Lehane is with me in the studio, author, born and bred Bostonian. He's author of Mystic River, Shutter Island, Moonlight Mile, Live by Night. You can find a link to his latest essay on the bombings at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can join us at 800-423-8255. With us right now as well, Amanda Palmer, most known as lead singer, pianist, lyricist, composer of the duo The Dresden Dolls, longtime Bostonian, also a well-known soloist, half of the duo Evelyn Evelyn, most recently the lead singer and songwriter of Amanda Palmer and the Grand Theft Orchestra. She wrote a long blog post in response to the marathon bombings called Keep On Running. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Joins us right now from Boston. Amanda Palmer, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We read your blog post. How are you taking this on board as the days go by, Amanda?
Well, you know, every time something terrible happens, you always, you feel this immense sadness and maybe also gratitude in the moment. And then, you know, the speed of life is so fast, it's almost painful to see how quickly things snap back to normal.
You grew up in Lexington, where this day is, you've got the reenactment every year of the Battle of Lexington on the Green and all that. Describe for people listening around the country what this day is like, what's reenacted there, the kind of sentiments it raises in this town.
Oh, it's a really emotional day in Lexington. It's kind of like Lexington's, you know, own little version of Christmas. And, you know, the kids really look forward to it. I used to wake up at 5 in the morning every Patriots Day and, you know, get dressed with my friends and trundle down to the battle green and watch everyone shoot each other. And then pancake breakfasts and always at the school holiday and parades and stuff. And it's a really special, unique day for the town. And it's always on the same day as the marathon. It's, you know, the sort of big Patriots Day clumping of events.
So,
and, that's why it felt so personal. And I talked with a lot of my friends in New York who were in Manhattan and from, raised in Manhattan, and I told them that I really understood what they were trying to explain to me when 9/11 happened, and they took it really personally.
We've got a photo up at our website of you. You've written on your hand and on your arm on this day. I don't have it right in front of me now, Amanda, but basically let's think about everybody on this day, not just those who have been hit right here.
Yeah, well, I mashed up something that Obama said when he said there are no, on a day like today, there are no Democrats, there are no Republicans, there are only Americans. And I said, oh, we should take it one step further. There's no Democrats, Republicans, or Americans. There's only human beings.
I want to get our listeners in here with you, Amanda Palmer and Dennis Lehane. It's so great to have you. Lila's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Lila, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling with a totally different perspective. Basically, what I wanted to touch upon was I'm originally from Dorchester.
Yeah.
I'm a Muslim. I've converted to the religion. And basically what I've been hearing is, you know, I just want to reiterate what all of your other listeners have been saying is, you know, it's a really horrible day, what happened on Monday, and I'm really against it. But as a Muslim, what I wanted to touch upon was, I'm hoping, you know, sitting here wondering who's behind it all, that it's not a Muslim. You know, as a Muslim myself, I can tell you that Islam itself is totally against terrorism. And that basically, you know, to sit back and let's see what happens, let's see what the FBI has to say about who is behind this horrendous act. And, you know, not jump to any conclusions that it was a Muslim. We don't know yet. I'm hoping again. If it does turn out to be a Muslim, all I can tell you is that it's somebody who is claiming to be a Muslim and does not follow the religion that I follow and that most of my friends follow. So basically that's just what I wanted to say. And, you know, let's see who's behind this horrendous act. And the one thing that I have learned from all of this is it's made me feel incredibly proud to be a Bostonian. And, you know, that's basically what I wanted to say.
Lila, I appreciate your call. Dennis Lehane, Amanda, the city has been, I'd say very chill this week about jumping to conclusions here. I haven't heard a lot of assertions, oh, it must be this or it must be that.
Well, there's some. You see, like, if you read the right-wing press, you see some whack jobs in the Herald immediately said it was this was because of liberals. You know, this liberals, the blood of this is on the hands of liberals.
That they did it or that they invited it?
They invited it. We brought this, we brought this into the world.
Well, that's a little different from saying who did it, perpetrated it.
And you could hear, actually, I heard a little right-wing radio yesterday where they were saying, they were suggesting very clearly that it was going to turn out to be Muslim extremists. And you just go, based on what? I mean, really, is there nothing you can't jump up and down on for your, you know, is there nothing sacred?
I mean, it's going to be out there, but Amanda, my general sense of the city is of it kind of calmly holding judgment.
That's what I think.
Well in reserve here, Amanda.
I think the vast majority of the city is saying, you know,
let's just wait.
Well, that's what you get when you live in a city of like a gazillion intellectual academics.
Yeah, but certainly not only intellectual academics. I mean, I think the weight of the city has been, okay, we'll wait, we'll see.
Yeah,
but I think that speaks to exactly what we were talking about. What won't change in Boston? What's not going to change? That's the you mess with the wrong city. We're not going to be a reactionary city. We are a city that is very strong. We're a city that is, I think, very resilient. But we're also a city that says, look, let's wait till we see what the evidence is.
There's, absolutely,
you know.
Let's wait. Let's see. Mary in Springfield, Massachusetts. Mary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
I guess my point was going to be what you, the last caller and Dennis, just were reiterating, that you messed with the wrong city. And messed in the wrong city in the way that Dennis was saying at the beginning of your show today, that we're not going to interpret it the way or over-interpret it and over-dramatize and get all excited over the wrong stuff. Instead, we're celebrating the fact of the people who were there to help, the people who ran to give blood, and all of that, the calm, like, yeah, this is how you do it. You don't get crazy. You don't overreact. And we don't have all that melodrama, despite some media outlets trying to create it.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, I hope you're right. You may be right. We better withhold a little bit here. This drama is not over yet. This story is not over yet. We'll see how everything flows through. But I agree, Mary, that does seem to be the feeling, by and large, in the city so far. And I'm also glad for it. I appreciate your call. One more here. Lee in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Lee, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom. You asked where we go from here, and I would like to make a suggestion, and that would be bomb-sniffing dogs, clearly labeled as bomb-sniffing dogs. Otherwise, you're going to panic people who have other things in their backpacks. But walking around with their handlers throughout the crowd, and that will reassure the crowd, plus it very well might locate any explosive devices.
Lee, I appreciate your call. Of course, there were bomb-sniffing dogs on this day, but maybe not enough and maybe not often enough. I mean, you say, Dennis, we're not going to change. On the other hand, you can't remember the image of all those wounded people and not think to yourself, okay, fundamentally we don't change, but how can we make this safer still without changing its central character?
It's 26.2 miles.
Yeah.
26.2 miles.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? We're going to throw up a fence? I don't know that we do. I don't know that we do. You know,
I mean, there was a fence on Boylston Street, so you know there were barriers right at the end, and of course people had to climb over them to get to the wounded.
Right. So I'm not sure. Look, I don't make city policy. I have no idea what we're going to do exactly. But I think that if we fundamentally change the freedom and access to this event, then we have given up something. Again, that old Ben Franklin line. You know, we've given up our liberty in the name of security, so we deserve neither. I think there has to be again, we have to look at this long and hard. We've got 363 days.
And no doubt the city will. Amanda, what's your sense of the best response to this shocking week of bombings?
I mean, I think I agree with everyone who's been talking, which is, you know, an act of terrorism is committed to instill fear in a bunch of people, and the minute you go over to the dark side and you know, everyone starts getting overprotective and anxious, even in the name of safety, it can lead to, you know, it can sort of lead to the win on the side of the terrorists, and I think
you know, I was following a lot of discussions happening on Monday where right in the moment people were reminding, we were reminding each other, the only antidote is to proceed with fearlessness. Not stupidity, but fearlessness.
We'll give the last word. A listener online writes in with the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson's Boston Hymn. It says, "Come east and west and north by races as snowflakes and carry my purpose forth, which neither halts nor shakes." A very old Bostonian right there. Amanda Palmer, it's great to have you with us today. We're so grateful to you for joining us. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And Dennis Lehane, author of Mystic River, Shutter Island, Moonlight Mile, Live by Night, and more. Dennis, thanks for being with us in this hour.
Thanks for having me.
In a moment, we will talk with a reporter on the ground in West Texas about the explosion there. This is On Point. Late last night, a huge explosion ripped through a fertilizer plant in the Texas town of West near Waco, Texas, killing several, injuring over 160 people. The blast leveled homes and businesses. Authorities evacuated the town. And all of this comes on the eve of the 20th anniversary of the federal siege at Waco, where 76 died. Joining me now from West Texas is Daryl Preston, reporter for Bloomberg News, covering the explosion there. He was just at the latest press briefing. Daryl Preston, thank you very much for being with us. What's the latest on the numbers of dead and injured, Daryl?
Hi, Tom. They really haven't changed very much at this point. The numbers are still pretty close to what you just stated, 160 dead and or 160 injured and possibly 15 dead. They found one of the first responders, but there's still three to five of them missing and presumed to be dead. So,
And what is the latest theory on exactly what happened here? Maybe it's more than a theory. What happened?
Well, nobody's really speculating at this point on what caused it. Everybody's saying that they have no evidence to believe that it's anything more than an accident at this point, although the ATF and others are on the scene or coming to the scene and investigating, so we may learn more later today.
The first reports that we heard were that there had been a fire in the town that the fire had spread to the fertilizer plant with big ammonia or anhydrous ammonia tanks, and then there was the explosion. Is that still the narrative that's being shared?
Yeah, there was a fire that I think actually started at the plant, and then the first responders came and started fighting the fire, and then there was the explosion, which has been described as a huge mushroom cloud and a nuclear level by some of the local residents. It leveled houses five blocks away, according to some of the people who spoke at this briefing a little while ago. And I know it blew out most of the windows in many of the businesses in downtown. So it was a tremendous explosion.
We're reading here the toll, 50 to 75 houses and an apartment complex with 50 units. Quoting here, of AP quoting a state police officer saying that the apartment building had been reduced to a skeleton, a middle school, a nursing home, 133 patients evacuated there. I mean, we're talking very wide destruction. Is this a major fertilizer plant? Was this a very big facility?
No, it wasn't that big. It was fairly small. I mean, it served the needs of the local farmers in this area and provided them the fertilizer they needed for their crops. I think a lot of corn's grown. Despite what you hear about the drought in Texas, it's actually very lush around this area right now. The nursing home, apparently a lot of patients there were injured fairly seriously, and I talked to one guy who'd taken three of them himself to the hospital in Waco because of there just weren't enough vehicles to take everybody.
An explosion with the force of an earthquake, measuring measurable on the earthquake measurement scale, kind of amazing in itself. A pretty small town, fewer than 3,000 residents here, with that many houses down. What, we're 20 miles or so from Waco. And for such a small town, this is a deep blow.
Yeah, it's a huge blow. People are really, really upset. They're sort of in shock right now when you look around. And yeah, it's devastating.
Is the fire under control?
Yeah, some rain came in overnight, and the fire, according to the most recent briefing, is under control. It's been reduced to smoldering at this point.
And West,
they're still not letting people in. There's concerns about contamination and that sort of thing. There's also been reports of looting, believe it or not.
That is pretty unbelievable in a town that small and really far from any big population center. Though I understand they've got some big truck stops there. People frequently stop on the way down to Austin, let's say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the police have secured the area off fairly solidly, but there's still some residents who are in downtown and boarding up their businesses that lost their windows.
Shocking developments overnight there in West Texas near Waco. Daryl Preston is a reporter for Bloomberg News, joined us from West Texas. Daryl, thank you very much. Be safe. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure. Bye.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Whether on air or online, your participation is always welcome. This conversation never ends. On Point is produced by Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Sam Gale Rosen, Eileen Amata, Emily Alphen Johnson, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell. With help from Ali Harrison and Sarah Platt, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.